Hello and welcome to the Community Broadband Bits podcast, brought to you by the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. This is Lisa Gonzalez. In our 27th episode, we talked to Bruce Kushnick, Executive Director of the New Networks Institute. Bruce has been a telecom analyst for over 29 years and is heavily involved in consumer advocacy through Teletruth. Bruce is a regular blogger on the Huffington Post, and his articles run in a variety of syndicated publications. He's been described as the Ralph Nader of the telecom set. Bruce looks back at the modern history of telecommunications. He explains how the large telecommunications giants made promises to bring broadband to all of us. Bruce goes on to describe where things went wrong, how promises were broken, and how many of us will never receive services we've already paid for many times over. Here are Chris and Bruce.
I'm here today with Bruce Kushnick, the Executive Director of New Networks. Thanks for coming on the show, Bruce.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I first became aware of your work, I think, probably about 4.5-5 years ago, right around the time I was starting, and I looked at one of your books that you have available, and my first thought was, this can't be true. It can't be true that the telephone companies have ripped off America to this extent, and nobody knows about it. And so that's why I wanted to have you on the show today to talk about the research that you've done over many years, and what the telephone companies have done to our country.
Well, it's a long tale of woe. Essentially, the book that I wrote, which is now called 300 Billion Broadband Scandal, it was written in 2005 and then updated. Basically, the story is as follows. The phone companies, in 1992, soon-to-be Vice President Al Gore had this vision called the Information Superhighway. And he had basically suggested that everyone get a wire in their home that was fiber optic, and that the country would be rewired by the year 2010, which was the target year because it was 20 years away. It was far enough away that nobody could say anything that it wasn't going to happen.
Right.
And at the time, I was a senior analyst in telecommunications, and I had been working for various research firms, usually through joint ventures. I wrote a report in 1985. About how the addition of technology to the networks was going to change the networks. So I was very well aware of what the implications were of having a fiber optic wire to the home. And so the question was, is whether the government should pay for this or whether the phone companies would pay for this. And the phone companies all stood up and said, they raised their hand and said, hi, you know, we'll do this. And they made announcements. Then Bell Atlantic, which was on the East Coast from New Jersey down to D.C., basically said that they would have 8.75 million households wired, and they would be spending $11 billion. And out in California, Pacific Bell of California said that it was going to spend $16 billion and have 5.5 million households wired by the year 2000. So it was a very heady moment. And the phone companies, in order to go out and do this, just had a plan. And the plan was they would go state by state and have consultants, somewhat like myself, but I wasn't working for them. On this project. And they would go and say, hi, we would love to go out and rewire the entire state of, say, New Jersey. If you do one thing, we need to get more money, because if we don't get more money, we can't pay for the upgrades. So change the laws that basically don't look at our profits and allow us to make as much money as we can. At the time, they were still monopolies. And we will go out and we will rewire the state. So in the state of New Jersey, for example, Verizon has a commitment to have the whole state finished by the year 2010, 100%, with a fiber optic wire capable of 45 megabits in both directions. Now, Verizon went in every state and did this, and so did what is now AT&T. In Illinois, Ohio, Indiana, down in Texas, throughout the entire East Coast, Verizon basically said we would wire everything. AT&T said it would wire everything. And essentially, by the year 1997, it was very clear to me that none of these guys were telling the truth.
Before the Telecommunications Act of 1996, it's even really before the Internet has ever really happened. But you have these companies that have made a promise, and for many years they're collecting more money from, you know, everyone who's paying a phone bill. And they've promised to make these investments, and what you're saying is they didn't do it.
Not only didn't they do it, they pocketed the money. And it turns out that they've collected about $360 billion by the end of 2012 from the changes in state laws that gave them more money. And that number is actually conservative because they've been getting rate increases along the way to give them more money. So in state after state, every customer paid about $3,000 to $4,000 per household for the ability to have a new fiber optic wire. Let me address the things you mentioned about the Telecommunications Act in 1996 shows up, and basically it had taken 3 to 4 years to actually be implemented, and people would argue even longer. And essentially what it was they said the wire into customers' homes is going to get upgraded sooner or later anyway, but it should also be open to all competitors. I should be able to choose my own internet provider, my own broadband provider, my own phone service. And the phone companies all agreed to do this in exchange for letting them go into the very lucrative long-distance markets. Now, the long-distance is the separate service from local phone service, and there are separate networks that handle the stuff. Now, in the VoIP world, this stuff has all changed. However, probably at least a third of America or more has a separate long-distance plan that they're paying extra for. So it turns out also at the same time, in 1995-96, the Internet hit. And the Internet basically was, people were already online prior to 1996. There was at least 15 million people that were online who had gone on to things like AOL and Prodigy and CompuServe, which were the old online services.
Right. I have fond memories of those times. I used a web crawler, and I remember searching around for different local ISPs. It was a fascinating time.
Well, and the ISPs actually were the end of the year 2000, there was 9,500 internet providers, of which the majority of the small providers were handling the majority of traffic in the United States for internet. It was these small providers that went state to state, that lived in the communities or moved or were localized. And essentially what they would do would they knock on doors and say, hi, you want to go on the internet? We'll help you. And a lot of them were basically people who would go out and actually talk to you and show you how to hook up your modem and all that other stuff. And they were the ones who actually brought America to the internet. Mm-hmm. It was not the large corporations.
Right. Right. The large corporations took forever for them to even understand what it was about.
Right. So in the time frame, so what happened was in 1998, AT&T and what is now AT&T and Verizon basically decided to go out and pull a bait and switch. They decided to go out and use the old copper wires that were already in place and basically offer DSL, which is ADSL, which is basically a fast and only one direction and it doesn't have a lot of speed because it's on the old copper wire. Now, this irony has never bothered regulators. Even though customers paid for a fiber optic wire, they paid for a Ferrari on the information superhighway, and they got a skateboard on the dirt road.
So, when you say regulators, let's pile into that for a second. Who is making those decisions?
Well, originally broadband was on this broadband service and was basically a state-based decision. So that was the public utility commissions that made the changes to state laws that basically gave the companies more money. It wasn't the FCC.
Right. So you have the public utility commissions, and I'm just trying to think back. Before I was working in this field, I didn't really know what a public utility commission was. And so it strikes me that what you're talking about is a group of people at the state that only really ever interact with the big providers and the small providers too. But they're really insulated from the public, and the public really has no idea what they do.
In 2012, the plan now is to erase the public utility commissions from history. Prior to that, it was the states that were taking a gamble on attempting to try to bring broadband to the state. You have to understand, it was very messy because you have 50 states, but some states were very active. They had good commissioners. They cared for the public, and basically they were trying to bring broadband to the public.
That brings us to Kushnick's Law, right? I mean, you've coined this phrase, and I'd really like for you to explain what that is.
Kushnick's Law, as written, which I did not write, but somebody else did, is a regulated company will always renege on promises to provide public benefits tomorrow in exchange for regulatory and financial benefits today. And this applies to the federal government as well. Essentially, what happens is the companies walked into the Public Service Commissions and said, "Hi, we're gonna basically rewire the state, change the laws," and then the state didn't track anything. And if they did track anything, the companies never got their hands slapped at best. And there is no state that ever changed the regulation back to give the customers back their money. And which is, when you think about it, you know, in the state of New Jersey, they've collected $13 billion to do the rewiring of the state. That's a lot of money per customer.
So you've said that you think it was reasonable, or I mean, I get the impression that you say it was reasonable for a public utility commission to give these regulatory concessions in the hopes of getting the networks built. Why didn't the Public Utility Commission step in with repercussions when they did not get the benefits that were promised?
Well, there's a caveat to Kushnick's law is after 18 months, people forget that there's a law.
Okay.
And now you have to understand this happens on the federal level too. I mean, you know, for example, AT&T has just filed to remove all regulations in the United States. It's the FCC, and all telecommunications regulations that are left. In many states, they've been able to get working with a group called the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, they've gone into 23 states and removed regulations. In some states, the public service commissions no longer have oversight over the phone companies. Period. Done.
Yeah, we were looking at that in Minnesota. There was an ALEC AT&T bill that would have not only gutted the Public Utility Commission, but also the Department of Commerce.
Oh, listen, their goal now is to get the FCC to agree to basically close down the public switch telephone networks. And at the same time, their next step after that basically is to go to Congress, which a bill in Congress will show up at the beginning of next year to basically gut the Telecommunications Act of 1996 and gut all state laws. And this is one of the scariest things that's ever happened in my 30 years of being a consultant, because essentially what it's doing is it is removing basic obligations to the company. If your line breaks in the middle of nowhere, too bad. If your service goes out. Now, one of the important things, let me go back to the story. So in 2004, AT&T and Verizon come up with a strategy to close down all competition on the phone networks, basically by claiming that they would upgrade the networks then if the networks were closed, and create new services such as UVerse and Fios.
To whom did they make this argument? Was this a federal argument?
This was an argument made to the FCC, to the public, and in the states, because the states, in some states, they still had to sign off on things like a franchise for the cable part of it, and so the companies applied for statewide franchises. So in AT&T's case, AT&T said, "We'll roll out UVerse," and AT&T then, by the end of 2007, AT&T had controlled 22 states. Now you have to understand something about UVerse. It should be called Reverse. Mainly because it's still using the old copper wires. It is still using the wires that customers had, basically was supposed to be upgraded to fiber 20 years ago. They're still and they're claiming that they can close down whole areas of these networks, even though, and this is the funny part, even though basically customers paid for upgrades multiple times.
For people who didn't notice, also Netflix just released a ranking of the national ISPs. And for all of UVerse's supposed advanced technology, it came in behind all of the cable networks in terms of sustained speeds.
Right. Now, you have to understand, the word AT&T has a massive deceptive campaign out there. Their goal is to basically remove regulations across the United States. And so they've basically got the public to think that the word public switch telephone networks, the utilities, really means only one service, local phone service, formerly known as POTS, plain old telephone service. But I'd like to read you the definition of the public switch telephone network as told by a footnote in FCC's 2012 Connect America order. Quote, "The public switch telephone network is not a single-use network. Modern network architecture can provide access not only to voice services, but also to data, graphics, video, and other services. And the definition of the public switch telephone network was changed in every state law in 1992, basically claiming that it was now a broadband network, and it was a cable network, and it was a video network, and it was a data network, and it was an internet network, and it had nothing whatsoever. Sorry, the word internet wasn't around in 1992. But all of those services were supposed to, were and are part of the PSTN.
Mm-hmm.
This whole myth that, that basically that AT&T is putting forward is that one service, the voice service, is going to be closed down. But the truth of the matter is, you close the wires down, you close down any possibility of any service or any competitor using those services.
So can I, is it correct then to say that essentially what happened was you had these massive companies that went to public utilities commissions, they got rate increases in order to upgrade people's networks, they gave a lot of that money to shareholders, and some of the money they put into building newer networks over the years, and they're now claiming that those newer networks are not the publicly switched telephone network. Is that correct?
And just as a caveat, they are privatizing publicly funded assets, because the monies that were that are being used today are still the old construction budgets that were supposed to upgrade the PSTN. It's just now in the it's now in the pocket. It goes, the money goes into a different bucket. When the revenues come in, it goes into a different subsidiary. It does not go back to the local phone company to actually upgrade the networks, which it was supposed to do all along. Now, this kind of shell game that they're playing has been going on, is going on in every state with all the phone companies. It isn't just AT&T, it's all the companies. And essentially, they've been doing this now. And so what they're doing is they're cross-subsidizing their other businesses via the customers getting rate increases. In the state of New York, they specifically said that they were going to use the do a rate increase in 2009 to pay for, quote-unquote, fiber optics. The only fiber optics being installed is Fios. Now, this rate increase hit every residential customer and business customer in all areas, including the rural areas that are never getting upgraded. So, customers in rural areas got hit with rate increases for services they will never get. And one would think somebody would notice. You know, that's the thing.
And they've effectively won that bet, right? I mean, the people that have noticed have not been able to stop them. I mean, namely you, right?
Ready? Quote, "They will not close down the PSTN on my watch." Unquote. Close quote. I am not, this is not going to happen.
Okay.
If I have any say in this. And I will, you know, and I will use every last breath, because this is the end of telecommunications as we know it.
I don't know if we have any illustrators out there, but I think this is the beginning of a new comic book hero.
one would hope. Hey, I've been doing this. This is my 21st year of doing this. My feeling is this: I've been battered and bruised before. I'm very zen about it, though, because you have to understand, when you're sitting there. So I'll give you my favorite example. We were on the FCC Consumer Advisory Committee in 2003. And I'm sitting there, and we have just done a study on, we examined phone bills, and we did a study on Verizon phone bills. And we found 74 different truth in billing violations, among other things. We even had a class action suit that we took and settled based on some of the information that we actually were presenting that we found on bills. And on the, as being a member of the truth in billing thing, we actually suggested that they do a meeting and have a truth in billing day. This is a decade ago, literally. And they did the meeting, but we were denied to speak. And the reason why we were denied to speak was because Verizon was not only on the committee, but the meetings were at Verizon's offices sometimes. And the people in the room that I was sitting with, at least a third of the people in the room were the industry, and the other third of the room was paid for by AT&T or Verizon or Comcast. And they had direct financial relationships with these people. The group that's closing down the public switched telephone networks today is known as the Technical Advisory Council at the FCC. And the majority of the people on that committee have a direct financial relationship with Verizon and AT&T, who are also on the committee. The head of the committee is the former head of the National of the Cable Association, the NCTA, and he was the former head of the Wireless Association, the CTIA. And one would think that this is a conflict of interest. But no, not the FCC. So the FCC has had a meeting where they're going to basically close the public switched telephone networks. They've created a task force, which was suggested by the new commissioner, Ajit Pai, who basically was a former Verizon counsel and worked for law firms that Verizon and the rest of the phone companies uses with clients. And he was congratulated by a guy named Fred Walden, who's on the telecommunications subcommittee in the House, who basically his campaign contributions come from the cable and phone companies. And then so we wonder, you know, and I, when I mean that the Technical Advisory Council is a front group for AT&T, it was started basically when AT&T filed in 2009 claiming that there were two networks, a broadband network and the PSTN, and that one was the new shiny network and the other one was the old copper wires.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially that filing turned into a committee that basically was looking to, quote, transition or sunset the public switch telephone networks. Now, all of this is being done with the background of something called VOIP, Voice Over the Internet. They claim that the networks have to be changed because the VOIP services, you know, can't be done on the regular phone services, and we need to go out and upgrade all of the networks. The networks are always upgraded. They've been upgraded for decades with different standards. Now, the VOIP problem happens to be that VOIP is only one service. It's a voice service. And the other problem is not the Internet. And the third problem is they don't want to have, you know, let's keep it free. But the truth of the matter is if you look at a bill from the VOIP providers or people who are using UVerse, for example, is considered a VOIP service.
Right, or the cable networks, right?
Right, and or the cable networks. They, if you look at their bills, you'll see that they have all the taxes, fees, and surcharges as everybody else does, and all the made-up fees that should not be on the bill in the first place. So this nuanced jujitsu that they've been doing about free the internet has confused people. They bought off that AT&T said, oh, it's the old only phone networks, and that's not true. And they bought off that, you know, that the internet needs freedom, and that's basically the only freedom is for freedom for the phone companies. Today there are there's a thing, the public switch telephone networks has a word called switched. It turns out that the largest number of lines, which are not being counted, which are never mentioned, are the non-switched lines, which are the data lines, and they, which basically are, could be used VOIP today without any problems. They don't tell you that part because basically when they do, we're losing all these lines, they don't count VOIP lines as lines. So AT&T, when it says we're losing all these lines, doesn't include the UVerse phone, digital phone services at all.
You've made a really good case that the states aren't collecting enough data, the FCC isn't collecting enough data, that all of these things are being done, and we really don't know what's happening because there's no good data being collected. So is that the next good step a state could do, is to start collecting better data?
We have filed 62 times at the FCC, 19 times about the quality of the data. So the FCC is useless. They will not do anything unless we sue them. So if there's a lawyer out there that wants to charged $75,000, we'll be glad to work with you. On the state level, the first question everybody should be saying is, how many lines does AT&T or Verizon have in that state? That number is important. And counting all lines, including all special access lines and all digital lines and all lines that are not being counted. Two, the second thing they should start is an immediate investigation into all of this cross-subsidization and monies being put into these different buckets and the privatizing of the public assets. Because because what it looks like is you can actually wire everybody, and you can actually bring the wire to the rural areas and do it all this stuff, and the money's available. The companies have just been hiding it in all these different buckets. You know, when you said where did the money all go, the money went to the executive compensation. The money went over to spend, I think they lost $30 billion overseas in the 1990s and the beginning of 2000 because of bad investments as a group. And that's where the money went.
We drug a wire to every last home, more or less, in this country during a span of time that included the Great Depression and the worst world war we ever fought.
Right.
And it's, you know, it's sort of amazing to me that people can suggest that somehow we don't have the capacity to do it now. And it doesn't surprise me to find out that a lot of the money that would be helpful in doing that has been squandered away by these companies that are very good at hiding such earnings.
Our position is everybody should get wired, and you should have a choice of who supplies you the service. And that wire, if you have a wire now, you should just have it upgraded, period.
Right.
It's that simple. And if you're in a community that's been fighting this stuff, get the money back. Go after the money. You know, as they said, follow the money, money trail, and you'll find that the smoking guns. At the beginning of next year, we will be doing a new campaign to basically stop the ALEC-based bills and AT&T and Verizon from closing down the public switch telephone networks. This is the most important fight there is, because getting rid of all telecommunications regulation means most people listening to this will have higher phone bills, higher cost of expenses, and not get service. this is a battleground.
And when you say phone bills, I mean, I'm worried about younger people listening and thinking, wow, I don't have a phone bill now. How's it going to affect me?
Well, and I should mention, everybody who has a wireless phone, that wireless phone, when you make that call, goes back to a wire because the cell sites are connected to a wire. If you're using Wi-Fi, there's a wire connected to the Wi-Fi site. So all the stuff we've been talking about today affects you because basically bandwidth caps on the wireless services is created by the wire line control. Very important. And if you're not paying a phone bill today, you know, keep it that way as long as you can. You know?
thank you so much for coming on the show. And I look forward to having you back to talk about this ALEC campaign because it sounds really important.
Yes, I'd love to be back. Thanks, man.
That was Bruce Kushnick of the New Networks Institute talking with Christopher. Be sure to visit newnetworks.org where you can get some specifics on Bruce's work and the work of the organization. You can also download his report, The $340 Billion Scandal. If you have any questions or comments, please send us a note. Email us at podcasts@muninetworks.org. Our handle on Twitter is @communitynets. This show was released on January 8, 2013. Thanks to the Mojo Monkeys for the music licensed using Creative Commons. The song is called Bodacious.